Moving on now to convertible securities. There is further anti-avoidance legislation to prevent an employer giving low-value shares to an employee, which can then be converted to higher-value shares at a later date. When securities are acquired by reason of employment by an employee on terms that allow them to be converted to another class of shares, two charges to income tax may arise. Firstly, when the shares are initially acquired, and secondly, when the shares are converted. We will first consider the tax charge on acquisition. When the convertible securities are initially acquired, a charge to tax will arise on the award of the shares. This will be found by taking the market value of the shares at the date of acquisition and deducting the amount paid by the employee for the shares. The market value here is determined as if the securities were not convertible, i.e., the initial charge to tax is based on the depressed value of the shares. Turning next to the post-acquisition tax charge, a charge to tax may later arise if there is a chargeable event in relation to the securities. A chargeable event basically means either conversion into securities of a different description or disposal for consideration at a time when the securities are still convertible. The chargeable amount is calculated by comparing the value of the securities after conversion with the value of the securities before conversion. By way of illustration, Debbie is given 1,000 shares in Gallagher Limited, her employer company, in March 2008. The shares were then worth £8,000. The shares do not carry either voting rights or a right to a dividend, but they will be converted into full ordinary voting shares with dividend rights if Debbie is still employed by Gallagher Limited in March 2010. The shares will be worth £14,000 when converted. We will consider the income tax charges. First, there is a charge on acquisition in March 2008. This is the market value of the shares at the date of the award. In this case, the depressed value of £8,000. Next, there is a charge when the shares are converted in March 2010. This will be the market value of the shares after conversion, being £14,000, less the market value of the shares before conversion, £8,000, giving an amount treated as employment income of £6,000. A notional loan will be treated as arising where employment-related securities are acquired by an employee for consideration, and there is a delay in the employee paying the consideration. In essence, the employee is treated as having borrowed the unpaid amount from the employer, and a taxable benefit will arise on the amount borrowed based on HMRC's official rate of interest. No taxable benefit will arise where the notional loan, aggregated with any other outstanding loans, is less than £5,000 throughout the tax year. The notional loan will be treated as discharged where the shares are sold or the employee's obligation to pay is released. If the notional loan is written off, a charge to income tax will arise in the year the loan is treated as discharged. Where the notional loan is discharged by payment of the amounts outstanding or by death of the employee, no charge will arise, other than the usual notional loan benefit up to the date of repayment based on the HMRC interest rate. By way of illustration, Mickey is given 8,000 partly paid £1 ordinary shares in Cadillac Limited, his employing company, on the 1st of June 2009. A fully paid share is worth £2.50, and Mickey will be required to pay £1 in respect of each share when the company calls for it. Mickey sells the shares for £3 per share on the 1st of June 2011. At this point, the call, i.e. the amount owed to Cadillac Limited for the shares, is still outstanding. A charge to income tax will arise in 2009-10, when Mickey is given the shares. Fully paid shares are worth £2.50 per share. Therefore, shares with a call of £1 will be worth £1.50. The taxable benefit is therefore the value of the shares when awarded, being 8,000 shares worth £1.50 each, less the amount paid by Mickey for the shares, being nil, giving a taxable amount of £12,000. In addition, a notional loan will be created equal to the outstanding call. Mickey should have paid Cadillac Limited £8,000 for the shares, but he never did. He has therefore effectively borrowed an amount equal to the call of £8,000. This is treated as repaid when Mickey sells the shares in June 2011.
We will calculate a loan benefit assuming an official interest rate of 4%. For 2009-10, the notional loan is £8,000. As Mickey is awarded the shares partway through the tax year on the 1st of June 2009, we multiply this by 4% and then by 10 over 12 to give a benefit of £267. For 2010-11, the benefit is £8,000 multiplied by 4%, giving £320. The loan was repaid in 2011-12 when the shares were sold. Mickey sold the shares on 1st of June 2011, so the benefit is £8,000 multiplied by 4% multiplied by 2 over 12 to give a benefit of £53.
When the shares are sold, the loan is treated as written off, and Mickey will be charged to income tax on the full £8,000. From a capital gains tax perspective, a gain will arise on sale. This will be calculated by taking the sale proceeds, being 8,000 shares at £3, giving £24,000, and deducting the CGT base cost. The base cost will be the amounts paid for shares plus any amounts taxed as employment income. Mickey did not pay for the shares. He should have paid £1 per share, but this was written off, so he actually paid nothing. The amounts taxed as employment income were £12,000 on acquisition, plus a further £8,000 when the outstanding call was written off. The CGT base cost is therefore £20,000, giving a chargeable gain of £4,000. The final charges to look at in this session are shares with artificially decreased or increased market value. A charge will arise where the market value of employment-related securities has been increased or decreased by non-commercial actions. Non-commercial actions include anything that is done with the main purpose of securing a tax advantage, and for transactions between companies in a 51% group. A tax charge will arise on the acquisition of such shares where, in the 7 years prior to acquisition, anything has been done to decrease the market value of the security by more than 10%. The charge is based on the difference between the full market value of the security and the actual market value. Similarly, where something is done to artificially increase the value of securities by at least 10%, a charge to income tax will arise. The charge will be based on the difference between the increased market value and the market value disregarding the artificial increase. By way of illustration, Paddy is an employee and shareholder of Mimi Limited. The directors of Mimi Limited are employed by the holding company MFM Holdings Limited, which charges a management charge to Mimi Limited each year to cover the time the directors spend on the affairs of Mimi Limited.
In December 2010, MFM Holdings Limited decided to suspend the management charge and to make other changes to intragroup payments.
As a result of these changes, the shares held by Paddy increased in value from £5,000 to £5,400. There are transactions between companies in a 51% group which have the effect of increasing the value of Paddy's shares. The increase in value of the shares is 8%.
Thus, no charge will arise on Paddy in the tax year 2010-11, unless further non-commercial actions take place before 5th of April 2011, which result in a total increase in value of 10% or more. If Paddy's shares had increased in value to, say, £6,000, i.e. they had increased by 20%, an amount of £6,000 minus £5,000, which equals £1,000, would be charged to tax in 2010-11.
HMRC can also apply these rules to counter schemes whereby salary is given up in return for shares, giving access to a dividend stream, such that dividends are thereafter paid free of PAYE and NIC. By way of illustration, Carl works for Eastlands Limited as a salesman. On joining the company, he subscribed £100 for 100 £1 non-voting preference A shares. The shares carry no rights. Carl can surrender them for £100 on leaving his employment. Carl is paid a basic salary of £20,000 per annum, on which PAYE is withheld. Any further remuneration is based on sales.
Eastlands Limited wishes to remunerate Carl for his sales performance in the year ended 31st of December 2010. Therefore, on 15th of March 2011, the directors declared a dividend of £500 per share in respect of the A preference shares. A dividend of £50,000 was duly paid to Carl on the 31st of March 2011.
There is no charge to tax on the acquisition of the shares, as the amount paid by Carl will be equal to their market value. As Carl can only surrender them for £100, the value of the shares will be the £100 paid.
HMRC will argue that on the 15th of March 2011, the employer has artificially increased the value of Carl's shares by £50,000, and that amount should be taxed as employment income. Once the dividend is paid on the 31st of March 2011, the shares fall back to their nominal value of £100, but that decrease is disregarded.
Essentially, the legislation turns what seems to be a dividend into employment income. HMRC will argue that the action taken by Eastlands Limited is non-commercial, as one of the main purposes of this arrangement is the avoidance of tax and NIC.
£50,000 will therefore be subject to PAYE and NIC in 2010-11.
Finally in this session, a few words about reporting requirements. A return must be made to HMRC by the 7th July following the tax year in which there is a reportable event. The return is usually made on Form 42. The person liable to make the return is the employer, or the person from whom the shares were acquired. Reportable events include the acquisition of securities and a chargeable event in relation to such securities. Chargeable events include the lifting of restrictions or the employee disposing of his shares other than to an associated person before the restrictions are lifted, or the conversion of any securities, or the doing of anything which gives rise to a taxable amount counting as employment income. Details of shares acquired by employees under tax-advantaged schemes, such as SAYE schemes, company share option plans, and share incentive plans, do not need to be reported on Form 42. Separate report forms are provided for such schemes. EMI schemes similarly have separate reporting mechanisms, although where EMI options are granted in excess of the tax-approved maximum, currently £120,000, the excess options must be reported on the Form 42. There are two practice examples to complete this session.
As the forfeiture risk can last more than 5 years, a charge to tax will arise at the time of issue in February 2010. This will be 15,000 shares multiplied by the restricted value of the shares being £2, giving employment income of £30,000. If Shane resigns in December 2011, there will be a further charge based on the formula in Section 428.
The formula is proceeds received multiplied by IUMV minus DA over IUMV, where IUMV is the unrestricted value of the shares at the date of award, being £3, and DA is the amount paid by the employee for the shares, in this case nil, plus the amount charged as employment income on acquisition, being £2. Proceeds received are 15,000 shares at £2, being £30,000. So, if we work the formula through, the amount charged to tax when Shane resigns will be £10,000. A charge will arise on acquisition, being 15,000 shares multiplied by the restricted value of the shares, being £2, giving employment income of £30,000.
If the restriction is lifted in February 2012, a charge will arise, again calculated by the standard formula in Section 428.
Here, UMV is the market value of the shares at the date the restriction is lifted, being £7. IUMV is the unrestricted value of the shares at the date of award, being £3. And DA is the amount paid by the employee for the shares, nil, plus the amount charged as employment income on acquisition, being £2. This gives employment income of £35,000. That concludes this session on unapproved share schemes and restricted securities.